And welcome to the Generations Radio Program. I'm Dave Buhner, sitting in for our esteemed regular host, Kevin Swanson, who is off somewhere being esteemed, apparently. Sitting in with me is Steve Vaughn, a regular friend of the program. Steve, welcome to Generations.
Well, thank you, Dave. It's good to be here once again.
Hey, what is happening in America? I mean, this is not the America we knew. This is not the America we grew up in. Something has vastly changed. And people are running around saying, what happened? What happened? I mean, was it Jimmy Carter? Is that what happened? Or was it Bill Clinton? Is that what happened? Something fundamental happened and changed the country. And hear from a story I'm reading from The Blaze, which I think is Glenn Beck's news service that he's put together. From The Blaze is a story of a man named Michael Salmon, and he lives in the Phoenix area. And Michael's been hosting a home fellowship, a church that meets out of his house, a house church. And for doing that, the government in Arizona is giving him a special treat. They're giving him 60 days in the the Hilton, right there in Arizona. Amazing stuff here. Listen to some of this audio.
We want to stand for not only our beliefs, but for every believer in Phoenix that want to host a Bible study in their home, that they can do it without fear of the city coming in and saying, no, this is no longer just your home. This needs to become a church.
Wow, what is happening to our country? Salmon says hosting weekly Bible studies is the same as anyone else hosting weekly poker games. But Arizona courts consistently ruled against him. They declared he was running a church out of a private dwelling and said the city did not violate his constitutional rights to religious freedom.
There you go. You know, sitting around, worshiping, reading the Bible, that's just like playing poker.
Yeah, it is a gamble to go with the Bible, isn't it?
It is a gamble. Now, his religious freedoms weren't curtailed because he was worshiping.
Well, I actually had a church in my home for a while.
You did?
Yeah. Covenant Love Fellowship, we met in my house. It was a house type of church. It wasn't necessarily, you know, it wasn't going to stay in my home. It was, we started it in our house, and actually we moved from house to house to start with. And so I guess I should be thankful that I'm not in jail right now.
That sounds a little weird. That sounds sort of like the church in Acts, where they went from house to house breaking bread. Was that what you were doing?
Yeah. We were going from house to house, and we would break bread, and we would have communion, and we would have a meal, and we would
sing,
preach from the Word.
Bible study.
I guess I should be happy I'm not in jail.
Well, or perhaps you should be saddened, because, you know, a good part of the New Testament was written in jail. Well, Michael Salmon is spending 60 days in jail, which I think is the same sentence you get for rape or molestation. Now, if he'd been an illegal alien coming across the border, I'm pretty sure that ICE would have stepped in and kept him out of jail.
Right. He would have been able to do what he wanted to.
What's up is what's down. Now, I thought we had this thing in our Constitution right at the end. They tacked it on. It was called the Bill of Rights. And the Bill of Rights curtailed the government. Well, I know it was the federal government, but by extension, some of the local governments from doing things like, interfering with worship.
Well, couldn't he take that to a higher court to have the federal courts overturn this decision?
You know, he says here in the story, unless the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals grants an emergency injunction, he'll be jailed for the time here. So the chances of the Ninth Circuit Court...
Well, they're pretty moral, aren't they?
Well, I think they're pretty moral, but none of them have actually read the Constitution, as near as I can tell. Certainly not the Bill of Rights.
Okay. Well, that could be a problem.
Well, see, this is not – I think what we're doing is we're taking this the wrong way. We need to look at this in the day and age in which we live. This is July. This is not April. This is July of 2012. Now, in April 2012, we might see this as a civil rights violation. We might see the government overstepping their bounds, maybe forbidding even a right to assemble. We might see it that way in April, but this is July. And in July, we have to look through it through the lens of July. And the lens of July changed because the Supreme Court has basically said in the John Roberts opinion that this is not a fine. This is not a penalty. This is simply a tax. So he's having a church tax.
Okay. But can we tax the church? I thought, you know, churches are tax immune by tax law, as far as I remember.
No, Constitution is the Constitution grants broad taxing authority to the Congress. That's what he said.
Yeah, but how about the IRS tax code that says that churches are immune from taxes? In fact, you don't even need to be 501c3. You can be tax immune. That's the way
You're thinking like April. This is July.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
See, in April.
That's so 2 months ago.
Yeah, that's so April. 2 months ago, we would have said that the church was a separate jurisdiction under God than the civil magistrate. Now, they're both ministers of God. Paul tells us in Romans 13 that the civil magistrate, he is a minister of God. And the, of course, the ministers of the church, they're ministers of God. So we have two jurisdictions, the family being the third jurisdiction, all under God. We were one nation under God. That's what we used to say. We used to mean it. We used to actually understand who God was, too. But I digress. We would, back in April, we would have said these are two jurisdictions, equal and separate under God, where the civil magistrates doesn't choose the ministers for the church, and the church does not recognize in the official capacity as an electing the kings or the princes. So you go back to a time before America. You go back to, say, England. And in England, especially about the time of Charles II, you would have the king who would appoint the ministers of the church. This was a kind of a sticking point up there in Scotland where they wanted their own ministers and not some lackey that the king wanted. It was going to bring the king's policies, the king's sermons, and the king's ways, kind of a high church Anglican way, to these Scottish folks who really wanted not much to do with the king. In fact, they weren't really happy about being under English rule at all. Certainly didn't want English rule in the church. And not only would the king appoint the ministers, but then the ministers would crown the king. So the king wasn't actually king until the ministers, represented usually by the highest cleric of the land, placing the crown upon him. And so there was this relationship between church and state that was not really separate, at least in our understanding. The American understanding way back in April was that the church itself would appoint its ministers. The church would advise the state as to the law of God. The state would execute the law of God for that jurisdiction and would protect the church. But that's all gone now.
So how is that all gone just by what Robert said about the health care taxing law? Can you explain that?
Well, yeah, words don't mean anything.
Okay.
Words don't mean things. So it's not really that the state would be imposing ministers on you. They'd be taxing them.
Okay.
Now, it's significant in this article here that this man, Michael Salomon, was not accused of having a Bible study. See, that would have been a violation of the First Amendment. He was having a church.
Okay.
And so they couldn't stop him from worshiping. They could zone him.
Okay. So there's where the tax is not a penalty that he's being given. It's a tax that he's been given for being a church. But again, they're not supposed to do that. But like you said, words don't mean anything anymore.
Well, think about it. If he's a church, it means he has to be zoned for a church. His house has to have adequate parking, perhaps lights in the parking lot, and a sufficient number of bathroom facilities to manage the crowds, fire systems, sprinkler systems, tax forms.
Okay. I'm getting where you're going here. So in other words, he violated the government by having a Bible study in his home, which counts as having a church. And he didn't do everything he was supposed to do according to the government. So now he spends 60 days in jail plus a tax.
Well, it says here the Phoenix court documents show he violated 67 codes.
67. I didn't know there were 67 codes available for those types of things.
Well, Steve, come on. You just went from your house church into a rented space. Is that right? In Parker, Colorado. Now, I was there the other day. And you were there with me, and somebody was telling me that you had planned to have a door that separated a nursery area from a worship area so that the children could go back, and if they're being unruly or noisy during a service, in a small space like that, they wouldn't distract everybody, and mostly the mom who's watching them wouldn't be distracted. They'd go back there. But you couldn't put the door there.
That violated a code.
That was a code violation.
Yeah, we had to change the exit signs that were in existence there because of the new codes. We had to have get brand new exit signs because of the new codes. And then we also had codes for electricity. We had codes for sprinkler, which we didn't have to follow because it was already in existence. But, yeah, there was a lot of things that we had to follow in order to actually get the building space available to us. It took us 2.5 to 3 months from the time we began leasing. So we paid for about 3 months' worth of lease before we could even begin to meet in there because of all the codes we had to make sure that we followed.
So you had a number of codes that you were expected to follow, some of them which were probably in the dusty pages back there in the county building where they blow the dust off to make sure that they're still there, codes like you couldn't have an alligator in the sink or something like that.
Yeah, things like that. But one of the most expensive ones was the door that we had to put in for the front doors. We had to have them custom made.
There was no doors in the space?
Well, there were doors, but they weren't according to code. And so we had to have a machinist come in and actually hand do the doors and hand fashion the mechanisms, which cost us over $2,000.
Because the old mechanisms didn't lock?
Well, they weren't the breakaway mechanisms that are required now by the new doors. And so you have to...
Breakaway? Wait a minute. So I thought the door was supposed to keep people out.
Right, but
if they break away, doesn't that kind of defeat the whole security purpose?
Well, the problem is that if you locked it in a certain way, it would keep people in, and they wanted to make sure that everybody could get out in case of fire, which is why we couldn't have a door at the end of the hall because that was the only other way to get out. Actually, there is another way to get out, but that blocked one of the main accesses or de-accesses to get out of the building. And so having the doors locked, they wanted it to be able to get out from the inside with the doors locked. And with the old doors, you couldn't do that. You had to have a key to unlock it to get out. So therefore, we had to pay $2,000, $2,500, I think it was, to have the doors custom made for our space because of code violation.
But the door that was there for whatever business was there would have had to have been changed had anyone occupied the space. Anyway, is that correct, or
I think
was it only for churches?
I think it was because of what we were doing there, because it was going to hold more than just the few people that were there before.
If you were having poker games there, would you have had to change the door?
Probably not.
Probably not. Okay.
Yeah, but Bible study is like a poker game.
That's what I heard. Well, I heard it's not like a poker game. Yeah,
okay.
It's not like a poker game.
Yeah. So there was a lot of hassle, and Mike Cheney did most of that. He did all of the legwork, and so he had to go from place to place. Fire code, water code, all of that stuff. And it was a lot.
And you're not a big fellowship. How many people do you think you seat for worship?
Right now we're just over 30.
30?
Yeah.
So you had to do all that for 30. This is not a mega church. This is not the big church down in Colorado Springs that gets 20,000 people. This is 30 people.
Yeah, right now.
And in the homeschooling world, that could be like three families.
Yeah, we have six families.
Six families, yeah. So you guys are young families, right?
Yeah.
Right. Well, in Arizona, you couldn't do that. Well, maybe you could if you would follow all the right rules, or you could go to jail. Now, I think it would be really fun. I love God's sense of humor. I'm hoping that this man, Michael Salmon, has a prison fellowship. For the 60 days he's there, I hope he opens the Word of God, and he sings like Paul did in prison, and he gets like 100 people attending this cell worship thing, and he starts a cell church. Wouldn't that be ironic?
You'd probably end up in federal prison for that one, not just the local. But, yeah, that would be great. That would be so ironic. God is the one who's in charge, and God put him there, and hopefully he finds out what his purpose for being there is.
Yeah, we sit back and we can laugh about this a little bit because it's not us. But it easily could be us. Now, I meet with my church in a little building that's attached to a cemetery. It's a chapel, so it was built for that purpose, way, way out in the country. And, I think it would take a while for the fire department to even actually find us, let alone put a fire out. But in Colorado, you may not know this, but we just had those fires that we had down in Colorado Springs, big fires, all over the news, burning up houses after house after house. One of the reasons that fire was so catastrophic, not the only reason, but one of the reasons, was that the Forest Service was forbidden from putting fire retardant down as it was coming close to the houses because some environmentalists were concerned about some fish.
Well, fish are important.
They are important. So, you know, if your house burned down in Colorado Springs, we're sorry, but rest assured that
the fish are safe.
So, but I can't think that the fire would be good for the fish either.
You wouldn't think so.
I would think now that the rains have come in, that all that ash and stuff flowing into the streams wouldn't be particularly healthy for the fish. But I don't work for the government, so I don't know these things. Ladies and gentlemen, what has happened to this country? Have we all collectively gone insane? Have we lost our mind? It seems to me that every decision we make is just the opposite of what a logical, rational person would make.
Well, that's why I'm kind of concerned about you, Dave.
Because I'm logical or rational, or because I'm not?
Because you're not. Because I'm sitting here looking at you. What is it? It's like 9 o'clock, 9:30 in the morning, and you walk in here with what size of a drink is that? It's got to be like 32 ounces. It's a big gulp of some sort. Is there, you know, like cola or something in there?
This is actually says 44 on the bottom. I hope it's 44.
It's a 44.
I made a special point on the way, and I don't normally do this, but I wanted to celebrate the last vestiges of liberty. You know, we just had the 4th of July, and so we're celebrating some independence. But I went and got the largest drink I could in Elizabeth, which is, you know, not much of a town. I wanted to do it because, you know, Mayor Bloomberg has put an assault on my beverage. And so I wasn't that thirsty. I didn't particularly want anything that was in soda fountain. It's actually tea here. But I thought for the sake of liberty that I would pledge my lives, my fortune, my sacred honor. Well, at least I'd buy a big gulp for the sake of liberty this morning. And so here I am sitting and filling for Kevin Swanson, drinking the extra, extra big drink, a sugary drink, Mayor Bloomberg. That's right. I'm drinking it in Colorado. We thank the Lord it's not Manhattan. We'll be right back after this. I have always felt that doubt was the beginning of wisdom, and the fear of God was the end of wisdom.
Clarence Darrow.
The only true wisdom is knowing that you know nothing.
Socrates.
Belief is the death of intelligence.
Robert Anton Wilson.
If thou trustest to the book called the Scriptures, thou trustest to the rotten staff of fables and falsehood.
Thomas Paine.
Faith is believing what you know ain't so.
Mark Twain.
Whoever trusts in his own mind is a fool, but he who walks in wisdom will be delivered.
God.
The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and knowledge of the Holy One is insight.
God.
The fool believes his own ideas to be wisdom, but those who fear God and search for understanding find true wisdom. To lead your family in the pursuit of godliness, pick up a copy of Proverbs Study Guide at generationswithvision.com.
And we're back on the Generations Radio program. My name is Dave Buhner. Sitting in with me is Steve Vaughn, a man who, as far as he knows, is not in violation of any codes for a church or a poker game at the fellowship that he meets in.
Right, because our poker games, all the proceeds go out, so it's not, I mean, it's a legal poker game.
It's a legal poker game.
Yeah.
So
because there are codes.
There are codes for poker. I know you can play poker in Colorado, but I think you can only do it up in these Colorado towns where they have legalized gambling. So
right.
You might not be.
I may not be. I think you can do penny ante poker in your home as long as the house doesn't make any money.
The house doesn't make any money. Okay,
yeah.
So it's like my house.
Yeah. So, and I never make any money at poker, so I just don't do it.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, what has happened to America? I think there's been an assault on American values. We were preparing for a program last week, and I saw that American values had changed in this large survey. It reflected on how different age groups, different demographics viewed American values, or what were their values. And their values were very interesting. Family was extraordinarily important still, which tells me that, you know, we have work to do in our public schools still if the family is important.
That's right, because the government is supposed to be the one that takes the place of the family, and family does not matter with the government, and we can see that. And so, yes, they do need to start teaching that a little bit better in the public schools.
You know, Joe Biden just came out and he came with a speech. You know, and Joe Biden's always entertaining when he does a speech because, well, it's because he's Joe Biden.
Yeah.
And we want to thank the people of Maryland for keeping us entertained all these years. And now we'd ask that you would not entertain us so much. And the people, Delaware. I didn't mean that, Maryland. I meant Delaware. I apologize to the people of Maryland. And McCluskey, we've had enough entertainment there, too. But Joe Biden is not very happy with the Republicans because he says they have the values of the 50s.
Oh, and that's a bad thing.
I think he meant the 1950s, you know, happy days, Richie Cunningham. It was a bad thing for him. He didn't like it when people went to church, apparently, and where honesty was considered a, kind of an important thing, where a handshake meant your deal, and you would be good to that, where your honor was important, your reputation, where people sat around the table and had dinner together. It's very rare today that families have dinner together, which just blows my mind, because we don't like to have dinner unless everybody's there.
So why is Joe Biden upset with all of this?
Well, I think Joe Biden thinks that we need to have new values where Barney Frank gets married, where you abort your children, where you steal from your neighbor in order to pay for your health care, and where you send your children to the government to learn that it's okay for Barney Frank to get married, to steal from your neighbor, and to abort your children.
Now, I think they're doing a pretty good job at that. Promoting abortion and promoting stealing. I mean, that's what the government's for nowadays, isn't it?
Well, it's what they do best.
Yes,
it's what they do best. So here it is, American values. Okay, so here's the big survey on American values. Family values being significant or important in your life. The overall average was 41% of Americans still thought family values were important, which means that we have 59% that is not so big on the family.
Well, it sounds like Joe Biden's getting what he wants.
41% of males and 42% of females. So it's a dead even split between male and female. And if you break it down by age group, those who are 30 to 44 scored the highest. That is 46%, which shocks me because at 65, those who are 65 plus, we're talking about our retired seasoned citizens here, only 37% of them said that family values were important in their life.
Now, that's really kind of odd, because you would have thought that they would have had the values of the 50s, that family values were important at that age.
Well, hang on to your headphones, Steve, because it gets worse. Democrats of that age group, well, Democrats in general, were 42%, Republicans 35%, which means that Democrats thought family values were more important than Republicans. Now, what has happened to America? I think what happened to America is that the family was lost. The vision for the family was lost. R.J. Rushdoony speaks of the vision of the family, the biblical family, as being a trustee family. It's a great word. I'm using it a lot lately. It means that there is solidarity with the past into the future, that you were a trustee of the name, the reputation, and the wealth, the capital, to build God's kingdom. So that would mean that you, Steve Vaughn, represent all the Vaughns that went before you. You are the next link in the chain, but you're just a link in the chain. Your job is to pass that value, those social values, those religious values, the capital, the monies, the empire, the Vaughn empire, to your children, that they can go on and complete the mission. That's a trustee family. When you have a trustee family, family values should be up, in the 90s. I mean, occasionally you're going to have some guy who's an orphan and doesn't know where he belongs in life, maybe a war orphan or something. But by and large, a trustee family is a family that has a vision for the future. We know why we're working. We're working for our future. And that's why the Bible says that a good man leaves an inheritance for his children's children. We're always looking at three generations, always looking at three generations. And really, we're looking at six generations, because that means that you're spending the capital that you received from your grandparents. So it's from your grandparents to your grandchildren, you see this line. That's the window of time that the Bible sees the trustee family working in. Very different idea.
So how many years is that when you start looking at six generations? That's what, about a 200-year plan of some sort? Or is it somewhere around that?
Somewhere around there. my grandparents died in their 90s. My grandmother was well into her 90s. So assuming that I would live until my 90s, she died when I was 30. So there's 60 years, so 180, somewhere in there. But it's over a century. It's over a century. What we're doing now should, not only should, but does ring for the next century. What we do now affects the next century. What we do now in Washington sets up systems that affect our grandchildren and our great-grandchildren. What happened in the Civil War affected America well into 1950.
Oh, absolutely. And so I think the biggest problem is that we are teaching our children to be independent and to just go off and do their own thing. We've got our 35-year-old males who are still boys out there sitting at home playing video games with in their parents' homes and not going out and establishing their own territory, getting their own families so that they can pass these things on. Government is interfering with the passing on of your wealth because, if things don't change, as of 2013, guess what? Your inheritance taxes are going to go up to 55%, and the threshold is going down to $1 million. And with inflation, you take a look at what the cost of a house was in 1950. What's the same house valued at now today? If you bought a house, if you bought a property for $100,000 back in 1950, it's well over $1 million worth today. You pass that on to your kids, it's getting taxed.
And that's why the two most immoral, not amoral, immoral, destructive, wicked, evil taxes that our nation engages in, and they engage them all the time, is property tax, because that's taxing your grandchildren. That's what you're supposed to give to them. And the other is inheritance tax, and that's taxing the transfer of that wealth to them. One stops production. The other stops family legacy. And it creates the atomistic family, atomistic meaning atom, a single individual unit. And when you have single individual units, you don't have family solidarity. You have independence, and family values go by the way. And what happens then is you have neighbors who don't like traffic on their street, and they're willing to send their neighbor to prison for 90 days because they're hosting a Bible study. That's what happens when you don't have a vision for the future and you're only living for your present comforts.
So weak families leads to weak communities, weak churches, weak governments, all of them looking to be selfish, all of them wanting things for themselves.
And it leads to weak individuals, individuals without character, because character is honed within the family unit. Where do you learn character from, Steve? You learn it from your dad.
Absolutely.
Where do sons learn to work? They learn to work from their dad, because their dad says something very biblical sounding. If you do not work, son, you do not
eat.
And you know what sons love to do?
They love to eat.
They love to eat. I got some sons. You've got some sons. You like, they say, oh, Dad, I just thought I'd skip dinner today because I wanted to honor Mom. Doesn't happen.
No, not in our house.
They learn to work. They learn honesty, because when they're dishonest, bad consequences happen. It may be the rod. It may be some creative devices that we've learned in the last 50 years. Soap, Tabasco sauce, whatever. Helping a child learn to use his tongue in a wise way. They learn to get along with their brothers and sisters. If they have brothers and sisters, I feel sorry for the single children, families, because they're not blessed with brothers and sisters, and they don't learn to get along as well. But when you have a lot of brothers and sisters, you have no choice but to get along. You're in that big van going across the country, going to Wally World or wherever you're going. He looked at me, she looked at me as just part of life. Mom, so-and-so touched me. I know, isn't it great?
Yeah. Well, you asked the question, what's gone on in America? And I think I could sum it up very briefly. That the governments of America, especially the federal government, has said it's okay to break every single one of God's commandments. You've sanctioned the dishonoring of God, the dishonoring of parents. You've sanctioned murder. They sanction stealing through taxes. They sanction all of those things. Lying. You can lie as a politician and get away with it. They want you to covet. They want you to commit adultery. They want you to do all of those things. Bear false witness. They have sanctioned the breaking of every single commandment, and they were never to be able to do that.
Well, and that leads us to the second highest chosen value on the survey. If family values aggregated to 41%, moral values came in second and aggregated to, ready? 31%. which means nearly 70% of the nation doesn't think moral values are all that important. When you get to the moral values, the women scored higher than the men, 34 to 29. The highest age group was the 65 and over. The Democrats and the Republicans, dead heat. Dead heat on moral values.
Sounds like there's no difference between the two.
Well, and I think part of the difference might be how we define our moral values. Of course, there's only one way to define the moral values, and that's by what's moral. In other words, you can't get your moral values without a moral standard. Now, I think we have a moral standard. I think it's unchangeable. I think we know what it is. It's the law of God.
Well, that seems awfully intolerant.
It is intolerant, but that's what morality is. You're intolerant of stealing. You're intolerant of murder. You're intolerant of lying. You're intolerant of blasphemy. You know, you're supposed to be intolerant, Steve.
I don't know if I can tolerate that.
Coming in third was religious values. Now,
oh, that's got
to
be
family
good.
Values, moral values, to me, are religious values.
Yes.
To me, they're not separated. And I think that's one of the things what happened to America. What happened to America is we made the church this little tiny message about Jesus dying on the cross, loving you, and has a wonderful plan for your life. It doesn't – our religious values don't go to the law of God, tell you how to live, why you need a Savior, what you do after you have a Savior. You know, none of that works in our little box of our precious moments, Jesus. And so we separated religious values from moral values, which means that we've made our God not the ethical standard. We've made him some cosmic grandpa up in the sky. And I think that's what's happened to America. And it also means that being part of the family of God doesn't affect how I run my family. Him being my father who art in heaven doesn't really reflect how I'm supposed to be my children's father that art on earth.
Yeah, so here's the question. Did religious values even break double digits?
Religious values made it all the way up to 17%. The lowest age group was those under 29 at 13%, which means that we have a generation coming out of the public schools, which are, of course, anti-religious, anti-moral, anti-family, and the scores are reflecting that. Those with the highest reading or value of the religious values were those over 65, and they were all the way up around 21%. Republicans, 27, Democrats, 12. So Republicans twice as likely to be religious as the Democrats, but it doesn't reflect in their moral values, nor does it reflect in their family values. In fact, just the opposite. So what it tells me is the Republicans have a religion, but that religion is not moral. And that religion is not familial. It doesn't really affect their family.
Yeah, that just really blows me away. You know, how can you have religious values without being moral and without wanting that for your family, to have a family value aspect to that? How do you separate religious morals from religious values from morals and family?
Well, I don't think you can, and that's the point. The faith is for all of life. Jesus says, love me with all of your heart, with all of your soul, with all of your mind, with all of your strength. That means that we love Christ when we do family, love Christ when we do politics, when we interact with the civil magistrate, when we are a Christian in the civil magistrate. We still must have one God only, and him only shall you serve. If you're the sheriff, you still are the sheriff under God. It tells you that you must love God when you do your business, when you do your church, when you do your family, when you drive the car down the street. All of these are acts of worship and love towards God. Anything less than that is idolatry. And so, ladies and gentlemen, I think that's what happened to America. We put God in a box, closed the lid, and said, let's live our life pretending God doesn't matter in politics. God doesn't matter in law. God doesn't matter when I go to work. God doesn't matter when I kiss my wife. And before we knew it, God ceased to exist in our hearts and our minds. And the one we were to love with all of our heart and all of our mind, we just kind of forgot. Well, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Dave Buhner, filling in for Kevin Swanson. Join us again, won't you, next time, as we cast a vision for the next generation.